Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Hey, this is Paris, and I'm here at the Division II preview event in San Francisco, and I have the great pleasure of having some hands-on time with the game. And of course, you know I had to get someone to talk about it, so can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Paris. My name is Julian Garrity. I'm the creative director on the Division II.
Thank you, Julian. Last we spoke, actually was at Comic-Con, but we spoke on the record was E3, when you first debuted the Division II. I remember sitting right there in the front row.
Absolutely.
Your first words were in-game, and we all got excited.
You were my first interview.
Really?
On this whole, you know, crazy trip. You guys were my first interview.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear. So, since this time, since E3, we've had a chance to see the Dark Zone PvP. But we're here at this preview event, and you've started to talk about Washington, D.C. and the actual story of the Division II. So let's kind of just jump into that. There's some key things that you brought up.
I mean, there's a game like this. For me, it's all about the high-level stakes, and they couldn't be clearer than this game. You're going to Washington, D.C. to save Washington, D.C. That means you're saving America. You're establishing a new baseline for America to thrive again. And of course, there are factions in your way. So that's the high-level stakes. But what I'm really interested in are the personal stories, are the stories that you can investigate when you have a direct connection with the people, the civilians of this location. So you've got the macro. The stakes have never been higher. Save the country. And then the micro. Hey, there's somebody in a settlement that needs to find medicine for their daughter, or a scout has gone missing. Can you help us find them? And every single one of those stories that you're going to do is going to be reflected by the progress of either your base of operations or the settlements themselves.
Now, you speak of base of operations. Yep. So, Washington, D.C., excuse me, the White House itself is our base of operations. So, what went into that decision? That was that thought process.
Well, can you remember the base of operations in New York City?
No.
It's a post office.
Right.
So, I think we could do a little bit better in terms of iconic buildings. What's more iconic in D.C. than the White House? I mean, this is one of the most famous buildings in the world. So it had to be the base of operations.
Okay. So one of your key taglines when you gave us the presentation earlier was the online of the Division II, the open world, and the RPG. Now, just having some time here to play a little bit in the open world, there's so many little customizations and things that we're going to be able to do with our character and what's actually going to affect the world. So can you kind of talk a little bit about the RPG elements, and then let's talk about the settlements and the other things that we're going to encounter again.
So I think every single Division game that we're ever going to make is going to be based on those three pillars, and they're very important pillars. And behind the scenes, that isn't an easy decision. Making an open world game,
right,
online game, where everything is seamless. You go off the streets, inside your first mission in the Grand Washington Hotel. There is no loading. There is no matchmaking. It's all completely seamless. And that's from a major dynamic open world to, you know, one of those classic Division main missions. Technically, nobody else does this. This is something that we're incredibly proud of. RPG is always going to be the style of game that we have. It's all about that power progression. It's all about going into the world and growing and making those choices as your character. So we're not locking you into a class. We're never going to do that. We want you to have the autonomy, to have the freedom to choose, okay, how am I going to spec myself to be able to perform to the highest possible level? And how am I going to spec myself to be able to synergize with the other players that I'm going to play with? So, you know, these things are super, super important for us. And they remain the foundation on which everything is going to be built.
That is fantastic. And like I said, you've really built upon what was started with the Division One, what I've seen so far in the Division Two. So I know our time is limited, so I'm going to just kind of jump in another.
Yeah, go for it.
Critical things that I want to get on. So talk about the different factions and just, again, some of the activities and the player impact that's going to happen in the world.
So player impact is very clear. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, it's a complex type of game to work on, but those safe spaces that you have, the base of operations, the settlements, they need to reflect your progression within the mission, but also a sense of a new normal that's coming back mm-hmm. to the world. So every single mission that you do, that's going to be reflected in those spaces. Plus, it's going to be reflected in your character. The more you advance, the more stuff you're going to be able to unlock, the more stuff you're going to have on your character. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be more armored. It just means that they'll look more professional, more equipped for the challenges at hand. Now, the factions. Now, the factions, let's start off with the faction that is the most important to me, the civilians. This is a faction that you'll be seeing in the open world. They're not defenseless. It's not the same mindset as the Division One. These are not victims. They're going out into the open world armed. Maybe not with the best weapons, but they're going out because they need resources. They have needs. But guess who else has needs? The goddamn enemy factions. And here, we've presented to you three today: the Outcasts, the Hyenas, and the True Sons. Now, each one has their own twisted view of how society should be. And the only thing standing in their way, the only thing standing in the way of them ripping off civilians and taking those resources that we need, is the Division. And that's super important to me.
That's fantastic. So I got to jump into this because I can feel the heat of the clock on my neck right now. Endgame. I think the first time I ever talked to you, I even said with the original Division, I had a lot of issues with it because I wasn't impressed by what the endgame was going to be. Obviously, that game made great strides with that over the past 3 years. Let's talk about the endgame with the Division 2. What is the overall roadmap that you guys are thinking for endgame? Like, because we're going to blow through this initial content. That's just what happens with hardcore players. Yeah. But what is there going to be for me to do 2 months from now, 3 months from now, when I'm playing a Division 2?
So it's not only what's going to be there in 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
I think the Division, if we learned something from it, it's endgame had to be our focus.
Yes.
It had to be the one thing that we improve massively. So, just like the Division 1, the more you complete the campaign, the progression, the more stuff you're going to unlock, the more stuff's going to be available to you, the more activities, the more open world content. And all of this unlocks and feeds into the end game. So by end game, you have this whole buffet of activities available to you. But on top of that, and we're going to go into this a little bit this afternoon, at end game, there is a twist. And we're going to be injecting a brand new faction that's going to transform the entire map.
Okay.
They're going to invade Washington, D.C. They're called the Black Tusks. You have never faced off against something so hard. They're very, very special. I'm going to leave the surprise for this afternoon, but you're going to discover them. There's a narrative twist I don't want to get into.
Yeah.
But the end result of that is that this faction is going to be injected not only into the open world, transforming all of those activities that you were used to, fighting off against the civilians, but also the other factions, and they're going to invade every single main mission, transforming it, changing the narrative, and they'll be replayable with completely new random challenges. So they won't be set fire teams that you're fighting against. Every time it'll be a different challenge.
I'm almost speechless with you telling me that, because I had no idea it was coming, and I've not seen it yet, so I'm very excited about that.
That's the one thing. You know, we kept it back. It's a very big focus for us, and it's going to really transform your in-game experience. And again, it's just one ingredient, because all of the other activities will be available from endgame. You, as a player, to take on the Black Tusks, to take on these new endgame challenges, you're going to need some new tools. And those are the specializations that we talked about.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. Yep, wanted to get into that.
At E3. Because the specializations, that they're sort of introduced to you via the signature weapons, the 50 cal, mm-hmm. the grenade launcher, the crossbow. But that's just the start, because there's a whole progression to unlock skill mods, special ammo, special talents for you. So each one has a specific skill tree that allows you to lean into that playstyle. You're never going to be locked into one either. You can always switch to another. But when you're playing in a team, It's going to be great to adapt yourself and to play with other people who have that same logic.
That is fantastic. I know we're probably wrapping up.
But to be honest, I mean, if we can continue just a little bit, your question was, what about 2-3 months down the line? For me, that's post-launch. And it's not just an end-game mentality. It's what are we bringing for all of our players? How are we building on that experience? What I just said with the Black Tusk and with the end-game focus, that's on day one. You know, and we're going to be building on that with the raid, which comes out soon after launch. Soon, because we want you to get geared up. We want you to get ready. We want you to get teamed up to build a clan to get those 8 people into that sort of mindset of taking on the hardest content in Endgame. You've earned this. That's what we want to build between launch and the release of the raid. And then, as we said at E3, we're committed to bring content on a regular basis all throughout the first year for free for all of our players.
Again, that is so fantastic. You said this at E3, and obviously you guys are committed to this. One final thing from me, and again, speaking to you since you're the creative director for the game, I think this is very important, is the balance between someone like myself. Everything that you said makes me super excited because I'm looking forward to that end game and doing the raid day one and just everything that's going to be involved with that. But what about the casual player? What's that balance that you're trying to find to introduce this game to someone that isn't familiar with the Division, that may not necessarily be into these type of open world looter shooter games, versus me being a hardcore player, keeping me happy, but not overwhelming a person that's not familiar with the game?
I think it's one of those challenges that we have, for sure, because... And I've said this multiple times, but I'm a casual player. I'm not the hardcore. I'm not Terry Spears. I'm not the hardcore dude who plays hundreds and hundreds and thousands of hours. I build this game for people like me too. And Endgame, for me, in our game, does not only equal hardcore. And that's important to know. There are some activities that are going to be more hardcore than others, but all of the activities are going to be accessible until you get to that raid. And that raid, we have to reserve it to our more hardcore players. So you have to approach this with a mindset that, okay, endgame does not equal hardcore. Endgame doesn't have to be crushingly difficult. That's not its purpose. It has to be engaging. It has to be challenging. It has to encourage you to play things that you may not have tried before, or you may be a little bit intimidated to try. The Dark Zone's a perfect example. It can be intimidating, but we're putting a lot of things into place to allow people to really go in, explore, be a little bit under a little bit of tension and a little bit nervous about going in there, but really enjoy it at the same time. So for me, this is a game that really is adapted to different types of playstyle. And you can play it by yourself, you can play it in a group, you can play it with a real focus on min-maxing your character and their gear. You can play it like a shooter. I mean, it's something that we've been hyper-conscious of.
Fantastic. Final question. Oh, I guess I'm not going to ask it. Okay. No, I was just going to ask about what people can expect in a beta. That's all.
So the private beta is going to be really the slice that you played this morning. There's a lot of content there. There's over 10 hours of content. We're going to be launching with that. You're going to be taking over the White House, pushing onto the settlement, and being introduced to some of those characters, doing a couple of main missions, side missions, open world activities, control points, all of that thing. Plus, we're going to give you access to one of the invaded missions.
Fantastic, Julian. Thank you. As always, it's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.